higher performance and faster and more reliable.
And welcome to the OpenPaddock.net podcast. We're doing a special rally coverage event tonight. It'll be just me and Chris Leone of the Red Bull Global Rallycross Championship. We're doing a little bit of a mid-season-ish review, what I'm calling the Red Bull GRC West Coast Swing Preview, because pretty much heading over to the West Coast events after being everywhere else on the east side of the country, as well as visiting Barbados there. Welcome again, Chris, to Open Paddock. It's always good to have you, and we appreciate you taking the time to talk all things Red Bull Global Rallycross. First of all, how are you doing this evening? It's a pleasant 75 degrees over here in the Pacific Northwest, and we're hoping this weather can hold for a few weeks, at least until the Dirtfish event. But we'll talk a little bit about that later.
I don't know how many degrees here in Boston, because I've been behind the desk trying to make everything absolutely perfect for our West Coast fans in LA and Seattle and even Vegas down the road in November.
Excellent, excellent. Well, to start off with, kind of just a recap a bit of the season here, kind of just an events overview. The season is just past the halfway mark. You completed 6 of the 10 events of the season before making this West Coast tour. I still like to keep in mind that this is a newer series, you know, and I just wonder how is it mostly gone, or has it gone mostly according to the plans that kind of was outlined as the season got underway with Red Bull coming on and all that?
You know, I think this has been a fantastic season. We've seen a lot of growth. We've seen what I think may just be the most competitive racing in all of motorsports right now, with 11 out of the 14 drivers that are scored for points in our championship right now having made it to the podium, which is a ratio that if you go to, say, Formula One, you're probably not going to get that. Even if you go to some place like IndyCar, you may not get that. You know, just the amount of pound-for-pound competitiveness in our series, especially in the supercars class right now, has just been terrific. The drivers have been putting on a great show. We've had a bunch of fantastic new venues, including what I'll admit is my personal favorite, because I've always wanted to work there, Daytona International Speedway, the end of last month. And now we're looking forward to a little bit of normalcy insofar as we're heading to some venues that we've hit before, if not venues, then cities. We're really looking forward to our doubleheader at the Port of Los Angeles this September 19th through 21st. We're looking forward to heading straight up from L.A. to our long-awaited return to Dirtfish Rally School, and then we'll head to Las Vegas in November in the middle of SEMA week, as we typically do to close out our year.
Well, you know, speaking of that, you know, the different events, I mean, of the first 6 events, all but one were a new venue. Was that a bigger challenge this season over seasons past?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a challenge whenever you're going someplace new. But, you know, we really established a framework in Las Vegas last November for what our standalone events were going to look like. We were fortunate enough in joining Top Gear Festival Barbados, where a lot of those things were taken care of by those festival organizers. Obviously, having worked with X Games since the series' inception, that relationship was pre-existing. But then going to D.C. and New York, yes, the venues were new, but, you know, the process was, in a lot of ways, quite similar for us to send people out there to set up those tracks and just you know, having everybody sort of realize their role, hone in on it, and just make sure that everything ran smoothly. Obviously, we had a return to the dirt track at Charlotte, and everything was pretty similar to the way that that race went last year. The only change really was the time of year when we ran it. But then, you know, there are always challenges to putting on every event, but having been equipped for some of those challenges with how Las Vegas went last year, I think we were very well equipped to handle anything that really came our way during any of these races.
That's really good to hear. And, you know, like I said, I've kind of been battling myself a little bit with this whole trying to put the stuff in the cities. I like the idea for bringing the fans there, but I also like dedicated race courses because I like the size. I like the dynamic, usually like elevation change and things like that can make it a little bit more different. Stuff like that adds a little bit of variety, especially like you're talking about at the dirt track where they come mm-hmm. up out into basically what the grandstand area or whatever, where they got that little outer track part that's up high, and then they dive back down into the race course again, and makes for some interesting dynamics for how the cars perform. But moving on, let's actually talk a bit about drivers this season. You know, when you look at the point spread, I think it's pretty fair to say that the season didn't quite start out, at least this first half. A lot of us has predicted. Some of it, I think, is due to the heat race point system being slightly different, some to bad luck on the tracks. But starting out with, you know, looking at the at the top of the list there, Nelson Piquet, you know, we know he's been very fast from the very get-go, being very consistent, but he's also had his issues too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, everybody, I think, has come across at least one race weekend where just nothing went right for them. But the key is, and I believe it's the key in pretty much any form of motorsport, minimizing the negative effect that your bad weekends have on your actual finishing result. So up until Daytona, Nelson had not finished worse than fourth. And in Daytona, with his radiator issues, he still managed to make it to eighth. So with that all in mind, he's still got a 40-point gap on the second-place car, which is now Ken Block. Ken, another case of a guy who, you know, just did not have luck go his way early on in the year with not making it to the final in X Games, with his rollover in Barbados, which I'm sure everybody has seen by now. And then different guys have just sort of, down the home stretch of the season, are starting to run into those gremlins that they weren't getting at the beginning of the year. Scott Speed kicked off the year with two victories.
I was going to say about Ken Block, though, specifically, what's interesting about him, I'm being second in points, but only having the one victory, and like you said, missing out on a final. But I think this shows the strength of the changes you guys did in the scoring system, because he's consistently been a top qualifier and you know, had the high pace, the fast pace, to at least when he gets into those heats, to be in a prime position for a victory if he doesn't get punted or something bad happen, you know, and get some bad luck, some break on the car, whatever. So I think it really shows, like I said, that the point system seems to be working, where one event you get knocked out of, or even two events, if you're consistently quick, you can still be in the fight for the championship.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're able to win both of your heats, even if you have a terrible final, even if your tires all blow out, even if your radiator gets punctured, whatever it may be, it's still worth a full position, because it's actually worth slightly more than a full position, because it's 6 points as opposed to the five, which is our typical gap. With that in mind, you know, if you have some terrible heats, then of course you're going to suffer a little bit. And you've had some guys who have had it happen one way, and you've had some guys who have had it happen the other. If not for his strength in the heats at the beginning of the year, the position that Tanner Faust would be in would be pretty grisly, pretty low, because he was fortunate enough to win his first and second heat in Barbados. But then, of course, he had the issue where he overjumped the car, caused the red flag, went to the LCQ, and then didn't make it out of the LCQ. And then at X Games, he won his first two heats. But then as soon as the cameras came on with ESPN, he had the rollover. He left his car. Unfortunately, you know, that ended it for him right there. But because of the fact that he had run so strongly in the heats, you know, it mitigated the damage somewhat. It turned what were effectively last place finishes, because 11th and back all score the same amount of points, into really about 9th place finishes. And that can really add up over the course of the year if you just keep having some, you know, unfortunate luck. You know, every little bit matters. You know, there have been championships in different racing series that have been decided by only a couple of points. And right now you have a lot of positions in our series that are only decided by a couple of points. You know, you can have Johnny Weeman actually climb up into the top three if he just gained 3 points on Scott Speed in Los Angeles. So it could get really close.
You know, that's a specific driver, actually, I was going to mention, is, you know, Johnny, you know, we from the very beginning of the season, after how much he dominated it last year in the lights, you know, high hopes for him. He had qualified up on the pole at Barbados, you know, and, you know, ended up having mistakes. And he unfortunately, I mean, just kept making these, like, little mistakes throughout a lot of the season. But again, with his speed and the qualifying and the, you know, and his heat wins, he's still right up there. I think he's fourth in points right now, which is good to see. He still hasn't quite gotten that win yet, but boy, he's got to be knocking on that door.
Yeah, absolutely. But as you said, it's just been a case of those little mistakes. And in our series especially, you can't be making some of those little mistakes. We saw it very graphically in Barbados with Ken Block, obviously. Had he clipped the curb maybe just a couple of inches over to the pavement side, he might not have gone flying the same way that he did. Had Tanner Faust hit that jump in Barbados in the third round of heats just a couple of miles an hour slower, he might not have overjumped it, he might not have knocked the door off the car, so on and so forth. And Johnny has had some of those issues too. In Daytona, as a matter of fact, during the semifinal, he was in a great position. He had won the pole, he had won two heats, but unfortunately he stalled it in one of those very tricky loose surface hairpins at Daytona. A lot of drivers were having that issue, and Johnny was no exception, and it just really put him behind the eight ball for the rest of that weekend. He was really, really hard on himself after that because he felt like that was the weekend. And now is really crunch time for Johnny, I think, after seeing that Daytona race and after seeing his reaction to that race. Now is when we find out, is he going to take that next step this year, or is it going to happen next year? It's all going to be for him about how he responds to that particular race. If he can use that race as fuel, and if he can use it as something that's going to make him just be a touch more precise with everything he does for the rest of the year, then he could win all four races. If he starts putting a little too much pressure on himself, and we've seen a lot of guys in our series do that this year with the new format, with the new sponsorships, with everything like that, then it could sort of crumble a little bit. And given how tight the top five in points are, you know, particularly from Kenny second to Steve Arpin in fifth, you know, it could make all the difference. It could make the difference from him potentially being in first or fighting for first in Las Vegas, or some guys behind him being able to make up some more ground. So we'll have to see how he reacts to that. I'm confident in him. I think he will react well. Marcus Grönholm doesn't bring on just any old driver as his protege. I think he'll be very successful, you know, for the rest of this year. But, you know, we have to see. And it's a lot of pressure for a young driver to take on sometimes. Like I said, you know, I think he'll react well to it. And having that Finnish heritage, I think, will certainly help him. But, you know, you have to let the races happen. That's why we run them on the track instead of running them on paper.
Well, and part of it's, you know, I guess consistency, a little bit of a lack of consistency. He's got the consistency in the heats. It's just in the final, he seems to falter a little bit. I don't know if it's the pressure on the finals because he's such a young kid or what it is, you know. Accidentally, was it skipping a joker, or no, taking the joker twice, things like that. Yeah, like you said, stalling it on a hairpin. You know, he did it perfectly throughout all the heat races, you know, and it looked like he was definitely there to win, and then just stalls it out. So, yeah, it's definitely a lot of pressure there. I mean, similarly, I mean, you look at Steve Arpin or Patrick Sandell, you know, again, they're right, I mean, these are winners, but they're not consistently up there, right? So, you know, a little bit of mechanicals or whatever. There's been some, and these are guys that I kind of expect to be up there, especially, you know, with some of the backing. They're in the Fords that are known to be quick. But, wow, you know, looking back at Bucky Lasek is one that's been a shining star for the season for me. Talk about some of that consistency, consistently improving, getting a hold of that bigger car that is the Subaru and wringing the best that you can out of it. I've been really impressed with how he's been, to me, a better driver than Sverre Isaacson's been in that car, even though Sverre is higher in the points.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Some of the stuff that Bucky has done has been really, really impressive this year. Obviously, he took his first heat win. He has more podiums right now than his Subaru teammate in Sverre Isaacson. The thing with Bucky is just that for the first 2 years of his GRC career, he was very much in learning mode. He was very much trying to absorb everything that was being thrown at him. He was just trying to develop his skills as a rallycross driver. And unfortunately, it was just kind of being put on public display, you know? And it's a tough situation to put a guy in that a lot of people, based on his background, are going to assume the worst about anyway. You know, you have a lot of guys who have transitioned from different sports to motor racing, and people don't expect a lot of them, and there is nothing that a pundit loves more than to be proven right about a negative assumption on somebody. So with that in mind, it's been really refreshing to see how quick Bucky has been consistently every race weekend. He had an engine failure in Barbados, but of course he came back a couple weeks later and he got that first medal at X Games in the car. You know, he was fast in DC practice. He was fast in DC seating. He obviously got the podium in Daytona as well. You know, he's really established himself as a bona fide race car driver, and while luck hasn't always been on his side, but it hasn't been on anybody's side every weekend this year, you know, he's shown that he can hang here. He's good enough. He's qualified to race in this series and to run up front with everybody, and he has absolutely paid his dues. And to be honest, it may be more impressive that he really kind of hung himself out to dry the way that he did, just learning on the fly for 2 years. He put himself out there to all that criticism, and, you know, a lot of it just, it wasn't just him. Subaru was very much adapting from stage rally to rallycross. Those cars are not set up the same way. They don't have the same amount of power. They don't have different parts in the same places. They're very different animals. You can't just take one and be competitive in the other, whichever way you do it.
Yeah.
And so he's been, you know, undergoing the combination of trial by fire in learning, and that car undergoing its own trial by fire. And now that they've gotten it right, and now that he's learned, you know, what it takes to be competitive, just how much you can muscle guys around, so on and so forth, they're really starting to reap the rewards. And it would not at all be unexpected if Bucky were able to take a victory sometime this year. And it would probably be some poetic justice if he were able to take it at Dirtfish, as he runs up there quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I believe he's actually a brand ambassador for Dirtfish at the moment.
That's awesome. You know, the other shining star I think that I've really noticed this season, as far as, you know, where my expectations were and how well they've done, really, it's the supercar rookie of Austin Dine. You know, what is essentially kind of a privateer team, he's been doing extremely well.
Oh, definitely. It's been so impressive to see the way that Austin responds to pressure. He's driving the physical vehicle that Scott raced last year, so we know the car is proven. But the foundation of that team, it's fundamentally different from some of the other teams. You know, he's got his own devoted mechanics, and he's got a teammate, de facto teammate, in Steve Arpin. But it's not one of those, you know, 20 mechanics factory backed operations. They've got a handful of people that work between those two cars, and those guys, they work their tails off. You know, the best.
And they don't have a truck full of 1,000 parts, and, you know, they've got some parts, but I mean, they don't have everything, right? So, you know, they got to manage it.
Right. They've got one of the best mechanics, I think, in the garage in Scooter Davies, who used to work for Ken Block in 2012, who worked for Henning Solberg in the World Rally Championship, who worked for the Pastrana Racing Team last year. So Scooter knows how to manage a team very, very well. And that has absolutely helped them. They've just, you know, they've been one of those teams that they run into some unfortunate things in the final, but Austin keeps getting there. It doesn't matter if he's in an LCQ. It doesn't matter if he's running up front in his semifinal. He finds a way to get there. And they're the only two other drivers who have done that in every race this year are Scott Speed and Nelson Piquet wow. Jr. And that's a big deal. You know, the fact of the matter is he has all of the right skills in place. He just needs a little more luck, and he's going to get those results. He has really done an impressive job in getting himself to the right position where he can succeed. Now just some things that are out of his control need to bounce his way, and he will be right there.
And then, of course, we've got the two Kiwis and the Hyundais. You know, Reese Millen, he's been having, unfortunately, a few mechanical issues in the season. But finally, you get it to the bigger track where that little bit bigger car, similar to the Subarus, really seems to be able to stretch its legs, plus the improvements that they've made. And what do you know? He brought it home with a victory down there in Daytona.
Yeah, Reese had done some testing up at the Firm Rally School earlier that week, and they were really able to dial in some settings that they love. They've done a lot of testing over the summer months, and, you know, Reese has been working super hard to get that car right over the past few years. You know, the physical car that Reese is driving actually started its life as a WRC Hyundai Accent. It is a 10 to 12 year old vehicle that he's racing with a modernized shell. So what he has done in that vehicle is incredibly impressive, and I can't verify it for certain, but I feel like Emma Gilmore's Veloster may have started life in a similar form. That, you know, that being said, it's really a testament to them in some ways being the little team that could, especially overcome the fact that out of pretty much everybody who's running full-time this year, they were the only ones who weren't showing up to every race last year. You know, Reese still managed to do incredibly well at X Games Los Angeles last year. He came home fourth. He sent Stefan Verdier out to Charlotte last year, and Stefan came home fourth. But, you know, they didn't have that full year of experience, that full extra year of working on those cars, refining those cars the way that everybody else in the paddock had. And with, you know, with that in mind, it's obviously a huge deficit to start the season with. But they have really done a great job of overcoming that, especially recently. You know, it's not going to be very long before you see Emma Gilmore make it to a final. And, you know, once she gets there, the sky is the limit for her.
You know, she was the next one I was going to mention is, you know, she's really proven she's no slouch. I mean, she's a bit off the pace right now, but finally she's using the car's elbows a little bit to poke her way up through the pack. She's got, I think, find that little bit of confidence for that door-to-door type of racing that she just never really experienced before.
Yeah, definitely. The thing with Emma is that racecraft, the way that you need to use it in rallycross, is very different from racecraft the way that you use it in stage rally. And this is her first year of wheel-to-wheel competition, so she's having to learn some of those things in a way that, you know, she just hasn't had to experience yet. And that comes with time. It was the same thing with Bucky Lassick, where a lot of Bucky's racing, at least in the years leading up to his GRC ride, were Time Attack. I believe he was driving a Scion.
Yeah.
You know, Bucky had done the Toyota Pro Celebrity race, but that, you know, you get one of those a year. You know, it's something that it'll come with time for Emma. I think it will come if next year they are able to do some major updates to the car. I know that is at the very top of Reese's wish list, to be able to build a new vehicle, be able to, you know, whether it's still carrying the shell of a Veloster or whatever it may be. You know, and I think that would help immensely. Not that they haven't absolutely maximized what they can do with a 10 to 12 year old WRC accent. But, you know, that being said, it's you really got to have the right car to be at the front. It's the car is your tool. You can be, it's like carpentry or artistry or anything else. You know, you can have some of the most skill in the world. You can be one of the finest people at whatever it is you're doing, but you got to have the tool as well. You know, Hyundai is obviously a capable company as far as producing that goes. You know, we've seen what they've done at Pike Peak, especially with Reese. It's just a matter of, you know, securing the budget, demonstrating the return on investment, so on and so forth, and making that happen. You know, and I have a lot of confidence.
And in the WRC, just this last event, actually in Germany, they finished 1-2, their first victory there in Germany. And you know, they got a new team going on there as well. So, you know, granted, it's not Hyundai USA, that's Hyundai International or whatever. But still, I mean, it does show the commitment that they have behind these teams and to really try and push them forward.
Absolutely. It was it had to have been a good weekend in the Hyundai offices that weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, they won here with Reese Millen, and they won that Germany event all in the same weekend. So, yeah, it was all Hyundai all weekend. A lot of champagne being passed around, I am very sure. I guess, you know, kind of just running down to the last couple here. I mean, Pat Morrow, I know he's still been trying to develop his car, still a little bit off the pace. Looks like he's starting to catch up a little bit. Have you heard anything from Pat and how things are going?
Pat's program has definitely piqued the interest of some of the higher-ups at GM, and I don't think it'll be long before that car makes it to its first couple of main events. But the problem is, unfortunately, that Pat won't be racing again until Las Vegas unless some sponsorship magically materializes. That was always the plan, was Pat was only going to run selected events this year and beyond Daytona, which was at the beginning of the year, he had announced four events. One of them was Detroit, which was dropped. He was only going to do the three events at X Games, SEMA, and one TBA, which was determined to be Daytona after some lengthy discussion. But we'll see Pat back at SEMA. I think the motor will be stronger. I think that a lot of the things on that car will just be tighter. I think it's a great platform. I think it's going to do a lot in the next couple of years. It's just something where, you know, Chevrolet and everybody involved over there, they're still feeling it out. There's not really a heavy rally or rallycross tradition over there at General Motors, and especially not in this country, where this was the first time this June that they had ever competed at X Games, for example. You know, it's something new to them, and they're still learning it. They're still figuring it out. Obviously, Pat and his team have garnered quite a few accolades and trophies, especially in Rally America and the Super Production. So, you know, they're going to figure it out eventually. They just need to make sure that they have the right amount of budget behind them to really seal the deal and, you know, get some of those first best possible results.
I guess moving on to the GRC lights, as far as drivers go there, I mean, can anyone touch Mitchell DeJong?
You know, that's a good question, but now that Kevin Erickson is back in the series, we'll see that. Since Kevin missed Daytona due to a date conflict, the championship may be kind of decided there, because 66 points is going to be tough to make up on a guy who has been that fast throughout the course of the year. But, you know, there are a lot of really good young developing talents in that series. Obviously, Alejandro Fernandez and Tyler Benson getting their first podiums at Daytona was huge. Jeff Sykes showed a lot of speed in that race. You know, we're looking forward to potentially some more light entries coming into the fray in the next couple of events. So we'll see if any of those newcomers we'll be able to catch Mitchell.
That'll be definitely interesting to see, because, yeah, it's been rather remarkable with the clips we've been able to see of it anyway, but the amount of distance he's had ahead of everybody else. The only time he's had to slow down a little bit is when the car started to overheat, and then, of course, he only got past when he had a puncture, I believe. Other than that, he's just been completely dominant, And it's just very impressive, the talent in that young man. And I bet he just can't wait until he's 18 and he can move up to supercars.
You know, the reason why this series, why Red Bull GRC adopted GRC Lights as a class and its own series, was to find the next great rallycross superstars, especially with our series racing predominantly in the U.S., the next, or perhaps first, depending upon how you want to look at it, seeing as a lot of our top U.S.-based drivers have done a lot of other racing first, perhaps the first great American rallycross driver. And, you know, Mitchell could very well stand to be that driver. You know, that first driver who you see and all you think about with him is rallycross. You know, with Ken Block, who has become a terrific rallycross driver, you're always going to think of stage rally and Gymkhana as well. With Tanner Faust, you're always also going to think of Formula Drift. With Leif Millen, the same way. But, you know, with a guy like Mitchell, we have the chance to create our own superstar, our own, you know, number one guy who...
Right. A ladder built, you know, star of the series.
Exactly. Very much, you know, very much the way that I know that every other racing series tries to do it. Very much the way that I'm sure IndyCar wishes that they were able to do it with Jeff Gordon before he made the switch to stock cars. You know, just, you want to have that guy who is just through and through one of your guys, that everything that they build their career and their success upon is through your form of racing and through your series. And that is what we have the chance for Mitchell to become with us, and that is what Mitchell has the chance to become by racing with us. And I think as our series grows and grows, you know, I think the sky is the limit for everybody involved. Just knowing the amount of talent that he has, knowing how hard he works, knowing how quick he is and how smart he is behind the wheel and how well he can adapt. You know, like I said, I think this guy's the limit.
Yeah, and he's got that whole all-American kind of thing. The most I could probably maybe try to compare him to would be Joseph Newgarden in IndyCar now, who has come up through a little bit of the ladder stuff, and he's kind of the all-American kind of all-star kind of guy over there in that series. And yeah, I think Mitchell's definitely got that same quality. He's also very personable, easy to talk to. They interviewed him on your little mid-season review thing, the chat on NBC. And like I said, just smart young kid, you know, still doing really good in school and at the same time can drive the doors off of people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's the thing. Everybody who comes out of that lights class and drives a supercar, talent-wise, skill-wise, is going to be the same way. At the beginning of August, Patrick Sandell competed in that other series lights race up in Canada and was able to take the victory. And the first thing that he said to me the next time that we talked after that was, you know, these kids driving these cars, when they get up to the top level, they're going to be amazing. The things that you have to do in these cars adapt so well to supercars that you just wouldn't believe it unless you'd been behind the wheel of both. So...
Well, and I think even more so is the fact that these are cars that actually you have to keep that RPM up all the time. You have to keep them on the limit constantly or you get way bogged down. And what that means is that much more performance you're going to get out of a supercar.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you have to keep the momentum up in the lights cars at all times. If you don't, then you can really be set back. In some ways, it's kind of like playing Mario Kart. You know, you take that first shot, that kills all your momentum, and you're just completely vulnerable. I'm sure that we've all played Mario Kart and had that one experience where we were in the lead, we lost all the momentum, and everybody just ran us over. Well, that's exactly what can happen in a light car, except minus the cartoon figures, quite frankly. And, you know, if you're able to learn that, understand that, and bring that skill up to the supercars, where you have the ability to put the power down and use the power to kind of save you sometimes, well, you know, the sky's the limit for you.
So, you know, we've been talking about all these great drivers and whatnot, but I can also touch on a little bit with the manufacturers. And we did talk about a little bit as well already. It seems like all of them have stepped up quite a bit this year. We've seen VW, Ford, Subaru, Hyundai all on the podium this year. Wow, that's actually a far cry from kind of the complaints even just a year ago of like, great, it's the Ford Fest again. That has proven completely wrong for this year, and it's very exciting to see such a great manufacturer's battle.
Yeah, absolutely, and just the fact that Ford has a chance to clinch the manufacturer's title in Los Angeles mathematically is in some ways a bit of a misleading statistic because, to be completely honest, everybody has been fielding cars that are capable of victories, you know, and that's why you've seen three out of the four manufacturers that you've mentioned on the top step of the podium, and the other, Subaru, you know, has put two drivers on there so far, and in Los Angeles and Seattle has a very good chance to put on a third and a fourth. So it's going to be very interesting to see whether that works out for them. In particular, if Subaru can become the fourth manufacturer to win this year, you know, or anything else that may possibly happen. You know, like I've said, there have been 11 drivers who have made it to the podium so far this year, and that's big enough as it is. You know, we can very easily see 12, 13, 14, even 15 drivers potentially make the podium this year, and like I've said, that's a far cry from a lot of different forms of racing.
Agreed. So I guess let's next just want to kind of talk a little bit of the track that we've seen so far and maybe what we're going to see coming up here. So, you know, the tracks is something that's both excited me and frustrated me. And, you know, I've definitely talked quite a bit about it because a lot of it size matters with the size of the grids that we have in GRC and the size of some of the manufacturers' cars involved. It seems like the short twisties are definitely an advantage of the Ford and VWs. Whereas these bigger tracks, a little bit more space, you can really see the Subarus and the Hyundais be able to stretch their legs a little bit, a little bit more room to maneuver around. I mean, in Barbados, we had a track that was, what, about 3/4 of a mile? I think it was about 0.75. Austin was about a half mile. D.C. was about a half mile. New York City was really tiny. It was at 0.4 miles. Then we started getting bigger again with Charlotte. And then Daytona was almost a full mile-sized track. I think I talked to you a little bit about before, it seems like there's been a little bit of experimentation, some ideas moved around with where the Joker is. Daytona seemed like, to me, a very unique step forward in the design of some of these tracks. I like how you had the start-finish line, the start line was opposite where the actual finish line was, and you had the option of taking the Joker right at the start, or as it came around for that final lap, if you will, or whenever you chose to use it, that Joker could be on that final lap as well. Really allowing, at least from my viewpoint, a way that the field can split themselves right away to prevent the red flags, which is, I think the series as a whole just tries to prevent those as much as possible. And it really allows some different strategies to evolve throughout the races.
Yeah, definitely. You really have seen a lot of variation in some of these track designs this year. Daytona was a bit of a happy experiment insofar as we were able to make the Joker both the first corner and the last corner. And there are arguments for both when you're not able to do that. It's, do you want to be able to split the field up so guys aren't beating on each other so much the first lap versus do you want to have that opportunity for a very late race pass for the victory, which obviously Scott Speed doing that at X Games Brazil last year made that a popular idea. And it's happened in a couple of lights races this year where guys have, Oliver Erickson in Charlotte, as a matter of fact, passed everybody in one of his heats and was able to take a last corner victory in, again, in Charlotte in July as we were racing under the lights that Friday night. You know, I think that's really the philosophy is that we want to have those last corner passes, those last lap passes. I think that's going to remain the strategy at the forefront in some of that track design when we're not able to do what we did in Daytona. With that in mind, I'm excited about some of the layouts that we're going to have in the last few races. Los Angeles is going to be a 9-corner layout, which will be nice. It'll be a bit of an evolution from what we saw at the media day where some of the media members were getting ride-alongs in the vehicles. Seattle, we can't say much yet, but we can confirm that we're going to be running through the old mill building as we did in 2011, which will be nice. And Las Vegas, well, we're just going to keep that one under wraps until we get a little closer to that event.
So the doubleheader next week in LA, it says a 9-quarter layout. I'm guessing it's going to take place in the same area. I know when I got to go on that ride along, I like to describe it as somewhere between downright violent and fun as hell.
That sounds like one of our vehicles to me.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. It doesn't matter how tight you put on those seat belts, you're still moving around in the seat. what was neat about I liked about where we were in LA there was the elevation change. There is actually, even though you think it's a nice flat port, there actually is quite the different elevation in that area. There's kind of a hillside that's kind of on, I guess, and that made for some nice differentiation in it. That was still a little small, but I believe it sounds like you're going to be kind of just expanding that a bit.
Oh yeah, definitely. We're definitely going to be a much bigger layout than the media day ride-along layout was. We've got some actual space to move around. Like I said, we've got 9 corners. It's going to be about 0.6 miles, I think. So it's going to be right in the middle, right about the middle ratio of what we've done this season. So, you know, it's going to be a nice course. It's going to be something where I think the drivers are going to be challenged all 3 days to figure out exactly what it's going to take to figure out that course. There are going to be some wide sweeping corners and then sort of funneling down to the tight stuff. So, you know, hopefully everybody's just ready for this course. You know, it's going to be one of the best of the season, I think. And with that in mind, it's nice that we're going to actually be able to stage 2 finals on it.
So when are we going to see a map of this actual course layout?
We're going to release the course map layout the map of the course on the week of the event. That's sort of standard procedure for us. We try to do it as early on event week as possible, but as with a lot of racing series with entry lists, we try to do course maps on the week of the event. It keeps everybody guessing a little bit, and that little bit of mystery, I think, is kind of nice because, you know, going into these races, you don't always know what to expect. And I think that adds a lot of variation to these shows. I think it adds, you know, quite a bit to the spectacle that even the drivers are a little unsure of how to handle the courses. And, you know, with all that in mind, especially the fact that we're going back to Los Angeles where the series offices are, I think we're just really going to see the best event of the season. Having dual broadcasts on NBC is going to be huge, where we kind of get to own the weekend in a way that I know IndyCar gets to quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're just really looking forward to it.
So, to finish off here, there's some big announcements been announced this last week. There's this new 2014 through 2015 AutoZone Contingency Award Program for some specific teams and drivers. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, we've partnered with AutoZone. We're really excited about our partnership with AutoZone. They're such a great sponsor. They have such a lengthy history in motorsports. And the way that this contingency program works is whichever drivers opt in, and we'll be announcing the drivers who are participating shortly before the Los Angeles event, and everybody has the option to opt in if they would like. The top 3 finishing supercars drivers who have opted into this program will receive some cash bonuses. And, you know, we're really looking forward to establishing contingency programs like that for some of our drivers. So this program, as it stands right now, is going to carry through the final 4 races of this year, as well as the first 2 of next year. And we're hoping to expand that relationship quite a bit further because, as I've said, AutoZone is such a great partner. They've got such a lengthy history in motorsports. I know that they're working with Joey Logano in NASCAR right now. I know they've done a lot of NASCAR sponsorship in the past, and we're just really looking forward to putting forth that relationship with them and having our drivers be able to reap the rewards.
That sounds like a really good program, especially when you're talking about, you know, as we were talking earlier with some of the teams out there that are not quite the big manufacturer back stuff, like we were talking about with Austin Dine and Sundell and whatnot. And it's really good to see the contingency programs where they can see a benefit from that. And that'll definitely help out the teams that are working so hard there for it. the other big announcement, there are some driver announcements, which I'm pretty excited. And one of them in particular, I think you tweeted specifically out to me. we'll start off with though what's going on in LA next week. We got Travis Pastrana is going to be in a third Subaru car down there in LA. That'll be good to see him return after his showing that he had at X Games there. But then to me, what I'm also super excited is it's been a while for him. David Higgins is going to be up there at Dirtfish. And Dirtfish, I guess, is actually backing the car. Specifically, it'll actually be a Dirtfish-sponsored Subaru that he'll be driving up there at in Seattle, which I think is perfect for him, being the stage rally champion, six-time champion now of Rally America. And, this is good for Subaru, I think, and good to have another challenger out there.
Oh, absolutely. And the most interesting factoid about that is they're actually going to be driving the same car. So once Travis is finished with it in L.A., they're going to rewrap the vehicle, and then David Higgins will get a chance to drive it. So it's going to be interesting to see how they both fare driving the same car and if there are a lot of setup changes to that vehicle. Obviously, we're very excited to have Travis back. His power is something that just can't be understated, whether it comes to actual on-track skill, whether it comes to, you know, his power with the fans because he's such a relatable and such a nice guy, you know, anything like that. Having a guy like Travis, and fortunately our series has a lot of drivers who are similarly friendly characters, but having a guy like Travis come in is just a godsend, and we're really looking forward to it. He's really looking forward to it. But I don't know if it's possible to be more excited than David Higgins is to get back to GRC, because David Higgins has been at pretty much every single one of these races for the past couple of years, working in some capacity for that team and just trying to figure out the sponsorship to get himself back behind the wheel. And now that time has finally come, and he's going to be bringing 2+ years of pent up aggression, I think, to, Seattle. And, you know, the sky is the limit for him. The other thing that's interesting to note is because these two drivers are only racing as one-offs, they're not being scored for points under our series championship rules. You have to be competing in a minimum of half the season to be scored for points.
Ooh.
If you've seen the points after X Games, we just skip right over the drivers who are not competing for the championship.
Okay, so a scenario there would be is if either of them perform real well, you know, like podium positions and whatnot, would the points basically that they would have earned be forfeited, so then third place would just get third place actual points, or would they get, like, second place points?
Nope. The drivers in the championship are scored in relation to one another. So if Travis wins in Los Angeles or Higgins wins in Seattle, then the second place driver actually gets the 50 place points that would have been awarded to the victor. So it's scored as if they were not actually competing, and that makes it very interesting because, first of all, if you know, unlike other racing series, especially the nationwide series in NASCAR, where that absolutely hurts some guys who are just running for that championship, you know, instead of losing out on those potential 5 points, you actually, you know, you would still get them. Which is really big and I think is a really nice bonus to the system. But it also encourages the drivers who are just going, you know, who are just going to compete in the one race to sort of drive all out. And that backfired for quite a few guys at X Games, as the only one-off who made it to the final was Liam Doran. But, you know, it encourages them to take more chances. It encourages them to be the absolute top drivers that they can be on that given weekend, because they're not racing for points, they're racing for glory. They're not even racing for points for their manufacturers. So obviously that will be a little disappointing manufacturer-wise if one of those two drivers, Travis or David, gets the win and then the points just sort of vaporize. But, you know, it is what it is. It adds an interesting kink, an interesting dynamic to our racing. And, you know, we wouldn't have it any other way. We're all about trying to push the limits and do interesting things for the sport. And, you know, we think that the way that we're scoring points right now with drivers like that, we think that that does that.
Yeah, like I said, it's interesting. It's a little bit different than I think other series have kind of done it in the past. But I can see the advantage of it being that you know, it ends up being really driver versus driver that's actually competing in the whole championship, and them not having to worry about, you know, these one-offs coming in and screwing up all the whole point system, right? Let's say if it was a driver that's slipping in from Ford or something like that, and let's say that even upsetting the manufacturer's championship points because, you know, they slot right in there and block out points that could have gone to another competing manufacturer or something like that. So I can kind of see both sides of it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a different way of doing it, but I can see where it makes sense too.
About 20 years ago in NASCAR, at that time I believe it was Winston Cup, Dale Earnhardt needed every point he could get to hold off other drivers in the championship. So what his team actually did was they entered a second car for the Neil Bonnet, and they had Neil park it after two laps to ensure that Dale wouldn't finish last. We don't want championship manipulation like that. It's not fair to any of our competitors who are doing the full season. It's not fair to any of our sponsors. It's especially not fair to any of our fans. You know, we want the case to be, if you're going to come and just do one race, we want you to be going for glory. We don't want you to be doing it to help somebody else win. That's not fair. That's not right. That's not what motorsport should be about. And under this system, there's just no way that anything can possibly happen like that.
Well, sounds like there's plenty of drama still left to come with the four remaining events. It's definitely been an interesting season to start off with. So for all of you listening, next week, starting on Saturday, we've got on the 20th, it's going to be 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. That'll be 2 o'clock p.m. for us on the West Coast. And then we're going to have the, on Sunday after that, you'll have the next event, also at 5 o'clock p.m. So you got the same time that you can be there for watching both of those. Again, that'll be 2 o'clock on Pacific Coast time. Really looking forward to seeing how those events turn out. And, of course, I'll be up there at Dirtfish for the Washington event. That'll be the following weekend on the 27th of September. Then there'll be a little bit of a gap until Las Vegas. That won't be until November, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of planning and drama leading up into that. Plenty of time for the teams to get their cars all set up for the big SEMA show for the last blast. Chris, I just want to say thank you once again for coming on the show and talking everything Red Bull GRC with us for what I'm calling the West Coast Swing Preview of the Red Bull GRC. I can't wait to see him in person again. When I was down there in LA, it was pretty cool to see. I saw them at Dirtfish back in 2011, and it was pretty spectacular. I could see the potential that was there, but the way the field is now is definitely a far cry from what it was in those early days. So it should be good times. Again, everybody, this is Mike Shaw signing off with Chris Leone from the Red Bull Global Rallycross Championship. Chris, are there any last thoughts that you wanted to say before we go?
Yeah, thank you, Mike, for having me on. For our fans, there's still tickets available at LA and Seattle. LA tickets are available at redbullglobalrallycross.com/LA. Seattle tickets are available at redbullglobalrallycross.com/SEA for Seattle. And the Las Vegas tickets will be on sale very, very soon.
All right. Well, there you go, folks. Get your tickets if you're in town to watch it. I know I'm going to try and get as many of my friends up here in the Pacific Northwest that are rally fans to make sure they come and take a look. It should be a good show. All right. Have a good evening, everybody, and thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.